Ladies and gentlemen, please rise for the playing of our national anthem.
Baseball fans, you're listening to Babes, Babes.
Welcome to episode 6 of Babes, Babes. We are already over a month into the 2023 Major League Baseball season, and we're excited to be back together for another MLB chat. As you likely know, if you're following what's going on around the league, both of our teams here at Babes Babes that we specifically root for, the Yankees and the Cardinals, have been off to less than stellar starts, shall we say, to the season. And it can be hard to stay excited about the long season ahead when tough times strike so early on. So we knew that it was time to call upon someone that we know to be a most loyal and wonderful fan of not only his team, but of this game that we all love. So today we are joined by John, who is a diehard, tried and true Cincinnati Reds fan. And John, thank you so much for joining us. How are you tonight? And how's the season going so far for you?
Well, thank you for having me. I am pretty good tonight. You can't ever really be in too bad of a mood when it's Thursday night. So
it's true. Almost Friday.
I've honestly been enjoying the season so far. I mean, as a Reds fan, if anyone follows enough baseball, you'll remember that last year we started off 3-22.
So a little bit better this year, right?
We're 13-18 right now. And I feel pretty, with the expectation I have this season, I feel pretty good about it, particularly because April's also ended up being a pretty hard schedule for us with what Pittsburgh's been playing. So to be 5 games below .500, and we just came off a West Coast trip where we went .500, and that almost never happens for us. So I will gladly take that. We come home against the White Sox, and right now that's looking like that can be a pretty winnable series.
Yeah, there's your chance to get to 500.
I'm feeling pretty good about it. So we have some tough games, like we do play the Yankees this month.
Yeah, and the Cards, right? I think you play the Yankees.
Oh, yeah. Cards, like, towards the end of the month. I think so.
Yeah. So we have them. We have the Red Sox. We have the Mets. So, I mean, we have some obviously tougher games. But this is a season that I came in not expecting to be playing in October. So all I really was asking for was better than last year and for it to be a fun year. And so far it is being that way. So I will gladly take that.
Well, you bring up a couple of good points. One, I think it's hard to take into consideration the difference of the fact that the schedule is what it is. And that's obviously going to play in to how things play out over the course of the season a little bit differently. So that's some good perspective. And the other thing that you mentioned is you're going into it with a specific expectation. And I don't know about you, John, but that's what's like hard for me right now is I'd certainly had a different expectation for the Cardinals coming into 2023 than for them to be competing really with the Reds now for last place in the Central Division is where we're at. But many of baseball Twitter are familiar with you, John, and what a great fan of the game you are. And I actually had you and your lovely wife, Laura, on my podcast, Peace, Love, and Baseball, back in October of 2022. So we'll link that episode where our listeners can learn more about you and your beautiful family. But today, I personally am really glad to have you here to remind us that there's a lot more to be excited about than just being at the head of the pack every year. Jonna, as a Yankees fan, me as a Cardinals fan, these are two they are the two winningest franchises in the history of baseball. So we are used to always being competitive and having that postseason straight ahead every year. But you, however, have some expertise with following a team that's never really been super competitive in your lifetime. And it's honestly quite admirable the way that you support your team and the appreciation that you have for the game overall that really transcends the ultimate outcome of the season. So we're going to dive into the details of your Major League Baseball fandom today. But before we do that, we're going to kick off the episode like we do every episode with a little around the horn question that each of us will answer. So Jonna, you got our question today. What you got?
Okay. If you had to root for another team, who would it be? This is a question I'm still struggling with. Like, I don't even know how I'm going to answer this. I can tell you who I wouldn't root for.
Your answer. You're right. John, does anyone come to mind right away?
I can give three different teams for three different reasons.
Okay, go for it.
Let's hear it.
All right. So I'm a Reds fan, but I live in Cleveland. So Cleveland is by far one of the easiest ones to say yes to. We live here. We go to more Cleveland games than any other team. So very easy to get on them. I already root for them anyway. Obviously not to the degree I root for the Reds, but they would be a very easy team if I had to get on board with. My wife is a Philadelphia Phillies fan. So we actually are going to Philadelphia in 2 weeks, see them play. So that would be another easy one. But if I had to go off of like the bandwagon, like join the team because they're fun to watch right now, I know this may not be the most popular answer, but
I know what you're going to say, John.
I do too.
It's probably going to be Baltimore.
Oh, okay. That was way I got all worked up for nothing.
We don't like him in the South, do we, Kel? So yeah, I thought you were going South.
I thought he was going to say the Mets. We were reeling for different reasons.
No, I have no problem with the Mets at all. Like, they're fun to watch, but like, Baltimore, I have watched a lot of last year and this year. I love Adley.
Yeah.
Ballpark is one of the most beautiful ballparks in baseball, going there later this year again. So it would probably be them, but I guess if I had to pick one of the three, it would probably ultimately be Cleveland, just off proximity and everything like that. Like, for example, when I was dating my wife, she lived in downtown Cleveland the year they went to the World Series. And that was an incredible year to go to games.
I would say the Guardians would be an easy answer for me too, because my husband is from Cleveland. I haven't actually been to Progressive Field yet, so I gotta get on that. But they're a really good team to watch right now too, and really for like the last decade they've been fun to follow. But I feel like that's a cop-out answer for me. So, okay, if I'm being really honest, and I feel like I can't say this, so maybe don't tell too many Cardinals fans to listen, but I really love Craig Counsell and I really love American Family Field. So I might not hate being a Brewers fan if I had to, but...
Good bratwursts.
Yeah, I also really like the Phillies and appreciate kind of their team culture and like a lot of their players too. So those are my three. I guess we're answering three, Jonna. So
yeah. Okay. Well, my two cop-out answers would be, because they were my local teams growing up, the Rockies and the Royals, although the Rockies like have the most frustrating ownership. Like they just don't care. They don't know anything about baseball. They're in it for the money. And so, you know, they never really invest in their team like they should. So that just is such a bummer year after year, because you know that they're not going to do anything. So, I mean, the Royals had a good stretch there, like in what was that, like the early 2000s. They've had some Nebraska natives that have played for them. Alex Gordon was one of them. So those are kind of cop-outs for me. Here in the last couple of years, I've really enjoyed the Mariners, because it took them such a long time. I mean, they were in such a drought for so long. And so I don't know, it's really fun. And I also love seeing them like borderline knock off the Astros. So
they also have like half their team feels like they're former Reds players. So I would enjoy them.
Yeah, I think the Mariners, the Guardians, and the Orioles are all teams that, like, if you're a baseball fan, you're not gonna be mad about seeing them do well. Totally, and yeah. You know, they've definitely earned it, and they have a lot of great players and are great organizations. So
yes,
that was a good question. Okay, well, while we're at it, like, who's the team you would never root for?
I mean,
I think John's answer to this too.
I mean, there's a very obvious Cardinals answer in there.
Fair enough.
Okay, but we talked about this when I was on your podcast. I don't disrespect the Cardinals, though. Like,
sure.
They, for most of my lifetime, have been the team you want to model yourself after in terms of success and sustainability. So it's just the way it is. And obviously, I'd have to throw in Pittsburgh. Like,
yeah.
Obviously, the Pirates are never a team I have to worry about a ton just because they're typically just always been as bad as we are.
You never know. Do you think they're like really going to pull it out and stay?
No, I don't think it's going to sustain itself.
That's the general consensus.
I think it might make them a better team at the end of the year, but I don't think it's going to sustain itself. They started out last year, but they played 500 ball for like the first half of the year last year, and then ended
that
up
is true.
100 games. So those are probably really my two. I would at one time probably have said the Cubs, but I don't really dislike the Cubs anymore for whatever reason. Not saying I'd hop on the bandwagon by any stretch, but I don't think that's a category. Yeah, Milwaukee is a team I'm cool with in the division. I have no problem
with
that.
Yeah. I think a lot of people feel that way. I don't know why, but have you been to American Family Field, John?
Yeah, it was, I think I was thinking about this earlier, like 10 years ago. So I mean,
so it was like Miller Park then, but I love it. It's one of my favorites that I've been to for sure. Okay, Jonna, who would you never root for?
I mean, I think the answers are probably pretty obvious. The Red Sox, obviously. The Astros. But let's see. I don't know. I don't think I could root for the Jays or the Rays either.
Yeah. So you guys are kind of going off of
division. So
yeah, the ones that give you the most trouble in the division. I gotta be honest. I don't feel that like threatened by, I haven't felt that threatened as a Cardinals fan by our division overall. So that's probably why I don't necessarily feel that way. Obviously I have to say the Cubs, because it doesn't matter who they're playing. Like, unless it's going to help us get ahead in the standings, like, no, thank you. But I'm very anti-Mets and Padres this year. And it's hard because I like so many of the players on those teams, but I just don't appreciate the way that they're going about trying to buy the championship and like the short term, like grab at success. I'm like, come on, work up to it. So
brew them up in your farm system.
Exactly. It's the opposite of why we like seeing the Mariners, the Guardians, the Orioles do well.
Correct.
So there you go.
I agree.
All right. Well, I suppose we better talk a little Reds baseball, since that's where we're here to get our inspiration from. Jonna, why don't you kick us off?
All right. So John, can you tell us when did you first get into baseball? And then like, have you been a Reds fan from birth, or like, when do you remember that coming about and how did it come about?
I never really ended up really getting loved in baseball until I was a teenager. I grew up, when I was a kid, I loved basketball. And I kind of outgrew that into football. And then I still love football, but baseball took over when I was probably, 12, 13 years old. So I'm from Toledo. So we are in a weird spot where you get a pretty good mix of Cleveland and Detroit fans, particularly with Toledo's baseball team being the AAA team of the Tigers. You go just south, you get in the Reds country. So I've passively always rooted for Cleveland. Detroit's always had fandom in my family because my mom's side of my family has always been big Tigers fans. So, but my dad was, I think, 13 years old when the Big Red Machine won their first World Series. So he became a Reds fan. That's how I became a Reds fan. I also kind of, as a kid, took pride in being a fan of a team that not everyone else was a fan of.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of cool. So definitely was the Reds. And I started really rooting for them right before they got that run in like 2010 to 2013, where they were finally won the division and everything. I should point out, I am 30 years old. I was born in 93. The Reds have not won a playoff series since 95. So to point out how it has been, it's been that
yeah.
way. But, yeah, that I would say that my dad was my biggest inspiration for that. My first ever game was in Cincinnati at Riverfront Stadium. They actually played the Cardinals. And it was, they were building Great American Ballpark at the time. So Riverfront wasn't the complete cookie cutter that people picture it as.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
opened up in the outfield for their construction site. And I remember watching Mark McGwire and Ken Griffey Jr. homer in that game.
So, no wonder you fell in love.
Of course yeah. you fell in love then.
Yes.
So as you mentioned, the Reds have not been super competitive throughout your lifetime, but you are, I mean, you're one of the biggest baseball fans I know, and you are so committed to the Reds. What keeps you invested in the Reds, but I guess also just in baseball when your team isn't winning?
Well, the baseball question is super easy because I just love watching baseball. I pay for MLB TV every year because the Reds are out of the market, so I get their games. But if they're not playing or they're playing terribly, I will throw on another game and watch it. I have no problem with that. There's teams I'm obviously, what we had just talked about, I'm more drawn towards to watch. But, you know,
if you're going to pick a game to watch that's like, if the Reds are like not playing or if they're like not playing well and you decide you want to turn another game on, like how do you decide which game to watch? By team or like by what's going on in the game?
Both, in all honesty. Obviously, I can't watch Cleveland because we're blacked out. Because that makes total sense, living in Cleveland, to be blacked out from watching your team. I guess it kind of varies. Typically, the next one on our list would be to put on the Phillies and have them on. It varies. Typically, I'll turn on the Orioles and watch them. But typically, I try to find one game that looks good. I mean, if I'm wanting to turn on an X game and I turn it on and it's the fourth inning and it's 9-2, I'm probably not going to have much interest in that game to watch. So I better turn on a good game. That's why nights like tonight are disappointing because I believe there's only one game on this evening.
Yeah, I know. Weird. Everybody has a day off.
Perfect night for us to record then.
I know.
Yes. So it's like no matter how that game is, you are stuck watching that game. So.
But how do you, I guess, you obviously follow the Reds and continue to follow the Reds, even last season when they're off to the start that they are where, you know, by May 1st, like, okay, they're out of playoff contention, but you still stick with them. Is there certain things that you pay attention to, like specific player stats instead, or like things that keep you following along?
All right. So I'll use the last year or two as my example right now. So the strike happened, or the lockout, I'm sorry, it wasn't a strike. And then it ended, and immediately the Reds went sell. And that was like one of the most demoralizing things as a fan because we had just went through a crappy rebuild. Like they did not do a good job with it. We were built to compete in 2020, and COVID completely knocked that out. And 2021, they had a winning record. They were the first team in the National League to not make the playoffs. So all of a sudden, the owners are crying poor. They trade players away. You know, you're trying to stay optimistic going into the season, and then you go 3-22 to start the season. So that is probably the toughest stretch I've ever had as a fan.
Yeah.
But you accept what's going on, and it's like, there's nothing I can do to change it. So let's move forward. So the Reds' model right now was we have to stock our farm system.
Mm-hmm.
We do not have the resources to go out and just pay for free agent upon free agent upon free agent. Like, we have to build most of our team through trades, draft, international signings, and we should be able to fill in the holes from there. So that's what's gotten me through now, is knowing that we have one of the best farm systems in all of baseball. Like, we're like, most every person ranks us as a top five system.
Nice.
And we've never had that good of a system so far. Like, trading Luis Castillo was not fun, but we got back a haul for him. The Tyler Mahle trade might actually be the best trade they made. Mm-hmm. They got Spencer Steer, who is starting every game and looks pretty good. They got Christian Encarnacion Strand, who, when he inevitably ends up in Cincinnati, could potentially be a guy that hits 40 home runs a season. Mm-hmm. He just mashes a baseball. And Great American, being one of the most hitter-friendly parks, definitely helps. So, and like, he's a guy that we could get notification he's being called up tomorrow. Like, I doubt it, but like, we're that close. They have a lot of we're at the point now where you can arguably say they're going to be calling up a prospect every month or two, like a top prospect.
So that keeps it exciting for sure.
It does. And they've been good enough to obviously to pay attention to this year, because it helps. I mean, they have a, they will probably, my honest opinion, they will probably overtake Milwaukee here soon as having the best overall rotation. Milwaukee obviously has, one would say, one of the best rotations in baseball.
Yeah.
Once Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo and Graham Ashcraft get about 3 years under their belts, they're all going to be really good players. And there's other guys coming. They have a minor league player named Andrew Abbott. I don't remember exactly which year he was drafted, but he was a second-round pick out of Virginia, I think. He is currently leading all of minor league baseball in strikeouts.
Wow.
He made three starts in AA, and he basically was not letting, like, anyone hit him. And they moved him up to Louisville, which is our AAA team, and he's essentially doing the same thing. So he will probably be up at some point this season.
That's exciting. Yeah. Do you follow, obviously, like, players, but do you follow, like, the minor league teams and how they're doing, their records and all that?
Not necessarily the records, because I'm one of those people that I'm more invested in the prospects and which guys you think are going to inevitably end up helping the team. Like, Louisville started off terrible. They were like 2-10 or 2-11 or something to start off the season. I didn't care. I'm like, how are the guys that are going to end up being Reds come the end of summer doing?
Yeah.
That's really all I cared about. So,
well, that sounds really promising. That's exciting. I'll have to follow them.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And in case you two don't follow prospects as much, we have a player named Ellie De La Cruz. He is one of the top prospects in baseball. If he's struggling a little bit in Louisville right now, but he typically, through each level he's come up, has struggled a little bit and then figured it out, and he absolutely mashes the baseball.
A lot of times those end up being the best guys who, like, take a second to settle in. Yeah. Because they're like, they're settling in.
They have made some comparisons to Tatis for him.
Wow.
As what they think his comp could be. If he gets it together, he is going to be a superstar.
That's well, and then how exciting is it for you? Like, it's so much more exciting as someone who's educated about those things, and you're watching out for those guys and following them before they even get to the major leagues. So that makes total sense that is like its whole level of excitement in its own.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the best way I can go about it. And I can even rewind to, they made their playoff run in the early 2010s. I think it was like 13 or 14 was when their window of being able to compete with the current team ended. And we knew we were going into a rebuild, and we knew it was going to be a long rebuild. That was the thing that was rough. It was like, man, like, they're probably not going to be good again for a good 5+ years. But, like, it's going to come. And I guess I know the Yankees and the Cardinals are in different situations than the Reds are right now, because you guys are not in rebuild.
That's, that expectation is different.
it is. Like, you know, 2 years from now, I'm probably going to be like, yeah, the Reds' expectation is to, you know, win the division and try to win a World Series.
Yeah.
That's probably going to be a realistic expectation. It should be. You know, they fail to do that, it is what it is. But that's how I've, I guess, always gotten through it. I mean, they gave me a couple competitive years in 20 and 2021.
Well, and as baseball fans, like, there's 162 games, right? Like, we're long-term investment type of people. So you're just kind of taking it to the next level and like, okay, yeah, there's 162 games in a season, but there's going to be a season every season. And sometimes you got to look 2 or 3 years out.
Well, and I'm also a person that doesn't like live and die by each game.
Yeah.
So like the Reds are home this weekend against the White Sox. I think they're a better team than the White Sox are right now. I would love to say they would go in and win all three games, but my expectation is win two.
Yeah, and so it's kind of fun to like just look at a series, take it a series at a time too, and
like that.
Pick two of three, or can they sweep them? That's exciting too.
Well, like it was rough. They just played in San Diego, and they always have never played well in San Diego. San Diego's a better team. They may be struggling off the first month, but they'll probably get it together and be one of the best teams in the National League. I'm like, just don't get swept. Like, if we can steal a win out there, I will be perfectly fine with that. And they got one win out there. I was okay with that. So sometimes you know you're going to lose a series, but you just hope you don't lose 4 to Pittsburgh like they did 2 weeks ago. So.
But on the other hand, they just swept the Rangers, right?
Yes, they did.
I mean, that's wild. Crazy.
The games themselves were crazy because they should not have won either of the first two games.
Oh, wow.
The second game, they scored 6 unanswered runs in the bottom of the 8th to win by 1.
Ooh.
Wow.
Yeah, that was their biggest
comeback. Those are the best kind.
Yes.
I mean, if you're on the right side of it.
Yeah.
The Cardinals have played a lot of games like that recently.
Imagine watching that game in my living room and knowing I can't say anything out loud because I have a 2-year-old sleeping down the hallway. those are the series that you appreciate when they happen too.
Yeah. Because,
I mean, I'm of the belief that no matter how good you are and how bad of a team you're playing, sweeping is really hard.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, so you're at home. I think you should aim to win 2 out of 3, but to end up winning 3, I'm pretty happy about that. So, and that was right after losing 6 straight games. So, Well, they played the Rays. Lost 2 or 3, and then they went to Pittsburgh and lost all 4 games in Pittsburgh. That was rough.
The unpredictability of baseball is what we both love and hate about it. Isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Who is your favorite player of all time? Sorry, I forgot it was my turn to ask.
I mean, I'm going to go with a very popular answer, and it's Junior. I mean, it's tough not for it to be Junior.
I mean,
I can go off of a couple of guys I like right now, too. Like, obviously, I will forever love Joey Votto. I mean, I literally am waiting for Michaels to call me about me getting my jersey that I got signed by him framed done.
Nice.
So, that's the only time I've ever done that. So I got his autograph at Reds Fest back in December, which was a complete fluke. They even got it. So that was pretty awesome. But obviously I love him. Now, the one I will say that's a little surprising for me, being a Reds fan, is I have always loved McCutchen.
Me yeah. too. Oh, me we too. Talked about this.
Yeah.
I love him
the Reds.
Yes.
One of the ones that got away, I think.
Yeah, yeah. He's a Central Division killer. Like, he's the last person I want up to the plate, but I also, like, have such a hard time rooting against him.
Yeah, that's how I am. I could not hit him.
Like, yeah.
So, but yeah, I would say those are, I mean, one of my other all-time favorite Reds players and favorite players all of baseball was Jay Bruce. I know, ex-Yankees player as well. So, I love Jay Bruce. So...
Yeah, we've had a lot of former Reds players who I've liked. Todd Frazier. And didn't he come back and throw like the ceremonial first pitch this year?
Yes, he did.
I thought so.
So
yeah, I love him.
I mean, I know it worked to a slightly the opposite way, but like I love Sonny Gray when he came here. I know his time in New York was not what anyone wanted it to be, but
no, but he's killing it now. So
yes, he is. I think he's just one of those guys that just needed a out of the spotlight type market, and he could thrive.
Yeah, yeah. There, he was just one of those guys that just couldn't. New York was bad for him.
But like, I loved him, and I'm trying to. There's not a ton of. I don't feel like there's a ton of Yankees to Reds connections out there. In the same, there's not exactly a ton of Cardinals to Reds connections outside of Scott.
Right. Roman.
Right. I guess Austin Romine for the two.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Cardinals legend.
Hey, Austin, he was Romine. A Yankee for a little bit. For a
yeah. He was. Austin Romine is who brings us all together.
Yes.
Oh, that's too funny. He actually had a really big home run against the Cardinals last season when he was playing for the Reds. Like,
yeah.
Right. It was very shortly after we had released him. And it was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I have to go back through because, like, I really don't remember if there's a lot of – they're not two teams the Reds seem to want to do a lot of work with necessarily. I mean, I know that we traded Chapman to the Yankees, but that was one of those trades that further screwed up their first rebuild because the things that were off the field were against him, and the Reds wanted to get rid of him, and they pretty much were trying to think the best thing they could get, and – none of those prospects we got back from the Yankees panned out to anything. So
obviously we are talking about, like, you know, winning not being the most important thing today as kind of a theme of today. And Jonna and I have both actually been talking about how we really want to get to Great American Ballpark. We have not been there yet. So tell us about, like, regardless of win or lose, what is, like, your ideal Reds game day? Is there, like, certain things you have to do at the stadium, a certain place at the stadium that's the best to sit? What does it look like?
I am a person now that has to go in the game day differently depending on who is with me.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's absolutely fair. Love taking my son to a baseball game. It is one of my favorite things I look forward to the most because he loves it. He is 2 years old. I will not see most of the game.
Yeah.
It's just the reality of it. Yeah, it's tough for me to answer because, like, we went down to Cincinnati the middle of April when the Phillies were in town. And I have been to Cincinnati with, you know, my son. I enjoy going down with just my wife. Whenever we do that, we try to do a night game so we can spend a night down there.
Yeah.
So that's sometimes fun. We're going back. Actually, the beginning of next month when they play the Brewers. So I'm looking forward to that. Like, we're going, I got tickets in September when they play the Cardinals.
Nice.
So.
Is there, like, any specific food that is particular to that stadium that you like to get or that people should keep an eye out for?
I mean, not me because I'm not a Skyline fan. Okay, you can see the chick is back.
Yeah.
You guys know Skyline Chili?
I have heard of it. Yeah. I mean, I've never had it. You're saying it's not worth it?
I've never had it. I am not a fan of basically chili and spaghetti.
Yeah. That, you know what? They actually had, I don't know if this is still around, at a place called O.T. Hodges in St. Louis, which used to be in Union Station in St. Louis. They had something very similar to that that was called, oh man, I can't remember what it was called. It's going to come to me. But my dad was, like, obsessed with it. And it's kind of the same idea of, like, chili on spaghetti. And I think there was, like, a fried egg on it or something. I don't know.
That sounds like such a Midwest thing.
It is. But yeah.
I am the worst when it comes to, like, ballpark food because I'm literally, give me a cold domestic beer and a hot dog.
Yeah.
What I said. Classic. Like, a few episodes back, we talked about, like, what is the food you have to get, like, before the game with the pitch clock being installed. And it's like, I'm just a beer and a hot dog person.
Yeah.
I will say Cleveland does it well because they have patented ballpark mustard.
Mm.
So they, which not every ballpark I've been to has ballpark mustard. So definitely when I go to Cleveland, it is that way. Cleveland does a great thing because I will say, because we go to more Cleveland games than we do Cincinnati games just off proximity. Cleveland, they have a kids clubhouse that has outdoor seating to watch the game.
So it's fantastic. Easier to keep up with the kid and keep up with the game.
So we go a lot on Friday nights during the summer.
Yeah.
Because I work from home and I'm off work by like 3:30, 4 o'clock. And it is $15. You get an SRO ticket and a free beer. If you get there before the game, they do $2 like Miller Lights cans. And Friday night is Dollar Dog Night. So we will go.
Yeah.
And with
parking, go see baseball in Ohio.
Yeah. Literally, we can have like an entire meal. I mean, obviously not a healthy meal, but a meal.
And yeah, that's something.
Tickets and parking. And it's like, yeah, we spent like, I don't know, $70.
Nice.
To go to the game.
That's awesome.
So we do that a lot. That's why we went to Cleveland like a dozen times last year. And we pretty much always just got SRO seats and chased him around. Or they have standing room only sections too. So I love Cincinnati. I'm a Reds fan. I will not lie when I tell you that I love Progressive Field more than I love Great American Ballpark. So
that's fair.
I love going to Progressive Field. So
is there at Great American, is there like a place that you think is better to sit than others? Or like, where's your favorite place to get seats in the stadium if you're just going like by yourself or with your dad?
Well, if you take one good look at me, you can tell that I do not tan well.
So, same, John.
I am a need to sit in shade type of person. The ballpark faces, basically, if you sit anywhere in the first base line and you're like a 4 o'clock game or later, you're in the shade the whole rest of the day. Nice. I am always sit in the shade type of person. I am, believe it or not, I'm actually a person that likes sitting in the upper deck.
You can see things better sometimes and actually take in what's happening.
I love seeing the whole ballpark. I love photography, so I love being able to photograph the entire ballpark. They're cheaper, so my reasoning is if their tickets are cheaper, I can go to more games.
Yeah.
There's less people at times. So we had upper deck seats for the one game we went to in Cincinnati a couple weeks ago, and there was like no one else within like 10 rows of us.
Nice.
Incredible.
And it was just like, you kind of get sad that you wish the seats were more full, but you're also like, hey, you don't have to interact with anyone else.
Yeah, that's how I feel when I go to American Family Field. Like, to me, I'm like, this is such a beautiful stadium. This is such a great experience. I can't believe there's not more people here. But that's also like part of why it's such a great experience. It's because I'm not, you know, crammed.
I'll say the one and only time I've sat like way up high was during the 2021 Home Run Derby. That was at Coors Field in Denver. And I was like, wow, this is actually a really good view, especially of a Home Run Derby, because you have like the bird's eye view of everything. Everyone was knocking them out. So, yeah.
I think it's, I like it better, in all honesty. Unless it's like a special occasion. Like, I went to two games when I was in Cincinnati a couple weeks ago, and the Saturday game, I got free tickets through one of my reps I work with at my job.
Nice.
Because his company that he works for is owned by the Castellini family that owns the Reds.
Oh, so very cool.
They had like scout club tickets. So we got like, not the section right behind home plate, but the section right behind that with like its own lounge and its own entrance from the parking garage. Yeah, free.
Wow.
Amazing.
VIP.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. That, and it definitely helped that they won that game 13-0.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So, like in that, for instance, that was pretty cool. So,
yeah, it is fun to do things like that, to kind of like splurge, or like if you get the hookup every once in a while. But I am right there with you on that one. Like, if I don't have like some kind of special seat, I'd rather be up a little bit higher, because again, otherwise you're going to end up paying twice as much. And like, honestly, the experience is not any better. So
for example, this past Saturday, I went up to Detroit to see a game at Comerica. They play Baltimore, actually. I guess adding Detroit is a team I could possibly root for if I had to, just family connections there too. But I wanted to go see them. I went on StubHub and I got, my parents came with us and I got four tickets, and I think overall it was like $65 with fees.
Wow.
And we were upper deck, but we were the section behind home plate.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was like, yeah, all right, easy.
Worth it.
Yeah.
Well, you're telling us about stadiums already. So you've been to a lot of them.
Yes, I have.
24 what? To be exact. Is that right?
24, is that the running list?
24 altogether, 21 of them are current.
Okay.
Right, so three that are no longer around anymore?
Correct.
Got you.
Okay, tell us about that. Where have you been? Like, what's next on your list? What was your favorite, least favorite?
So my dad and I are doing them together. And we started doing, we did our first trip when I was 16. And we went to Tropicana Field. And honestly, I don't remember a ton about Tropicana Field. I can tell you, I saw them play the Yankees and the Yankees won by like 9. And I but that was every year since then, minus 2020, we have done at least one new ballpark. And we've done, overall, we've done 24 ballparks together. My favorite is actually Coors Field.
Yeah.
I loved Coors Field. We toured Coors Field the morning before the game. It, like, one of my all-time favorite ballpark pictures I have a picture on the dirt behind home plate with the entire ballpark in the background on a sunny day. No one else in the picture. It's like perfection. So I love Coors Field. I would easily go back to a game there.
It's beautiful.
My least favorite was Nationals Park. Wasn't a big fan of the location of where it's at in DC. It's kind of away from a lot. Just wasn't a big fan of the layout. I try to take out the bias of I went there when the Reds were playing there and the Reds lost by 15. but yeah, I just didn't really enjoy their ballpark a ton, but obviously wanted to cross off the list. I'm trying to think of other ones. I do not like the Pirates. PNC Park is stunning.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we live 2 hours from there. We go to PNC Park every year for a game. So that's, you sit on the third base line in the summer evening and get the skyline lit up by the setting sun. It is the best view in all of baseball.
That's opinion. Been on my bucket list for so long. Like,
it's great. We will end up back there at some point this year. My son has actually not been to that one yet. So we've gone the last 2 years, but it's just been my wife and I. So I think we're going to take him there for his first trip. Which, by the way, my son is up to 4 ballparks now. And
he's going to get ahead of me in no time.
He's going to be at 6 by the end of the year. So
yeah, so where are you going this year?
So I'm going to all my baseball trips this year. We were taking a somewhat spontaneous trip to Philadelphia in 2 weeks. Was not originally to go see the Phillies, but I looked up to see if the Phillies were home for my wife. They are. She's like, we have to go. So we're doing that. And then the summer, we're actually going back that way the weekend before 4th of July, and we're doing the Phillies and the Orioles.
Awesome.
Camden's another one that's on my bucket list.
I haven't been to Camden since 2012, so I'm really excited to go back to that one. But neither of those are my actual baseball trip. In August, my dad and I actually splurged this year, and we are doing both LA's and San Diego.
Oh, it's going to be so amazing.
Gosh.
We found
a dream trip.
Yeah, we found one weekend where they're all home.
Wow.
So we fly out Friday and come home Tuesday, and we see a game each day. And coincidentally, this was not planned, the Reds play in Anaheim when we're there.
Perfect.
Gosh, that's amazing.
So I'm pretty excited. I got the tickets purchased for each game so far. So I think we might go tour Dodger Stadium because we're doing that the first day, and it's a night game. So we haven't done multiple ballparks in a year since like 2015, which is the year I did St. Louis. We did St. Louis, Kansas City, and Minneapolis in 1 week.
That's I love that idea to make it like just a week-long trip and hit a few in an area.
I graduated from college in 2015. And like a week later, my dad and I went on a week-long road trip, and we tried to do a baseball game every night in the Midwest between Major League and Minor League. So we did Kansas City, St. Louis, Des Moines, the Quad Cities, Minneapolis. So
that's so cool.
Yeah, it was an awesome road trip that you'll do.
Like, so right when we get off this call, I'm going to call my dad and be like, dude, we got to get it together. We're slacking.
The hard part now for me is I almost have to go back, and now that I'm going to have a son,
Yeah.
And be like, maybe I'll start doing these with him now.
Yeah. So. Okay, so which ones are you going to this year that you haven't been to before? Just San Diego and Dodgers in Anaheim?
Yeah, I haven't done any of the ballparks. Okay, so I have technically seen every team play at home, Denver and East.
Wow, okay.
However,
yeah.
I have not seen a game at Truist. I saw a game at Turner for the Braves to play. And I haven't been to the new Globe Life. I went to their previous one in Texas.
Have you been to Oracle Park yet?
No.
In San Francisco?
No, I haven't done any. And I haven't done anything west of Denver.
Okay. So you're going to hit up the other California ones this year.
I should point out, most of our trips have been via car. Miami and Denver were the only ones we flew for. We're obviously flying for California, but all the other ones we did via road trip. So.
So, wow, you're only going to have, like, what, the Chase Field and Oracle. Is there any other ones that you won't have been to?
The Mariners?
I guess Truist.
Yeah, so
the Mariners.
We're trying to figure this out. So we haven't done Arizona. That one's pretty cool. That's, like, last on my list because there's always been talks that they may get a new one.
Yeah.
Time.
On Oakland.
We may be expediting the Bay Area trip.
Wait next year. Until the A's relocate.
To Vegas.
And then do like a Vegas, Arizona.
We're trying to potentially next year, we may go out and do San Francisco and Oakland just to say we got to go see an Oakland before they're out of there. We almost did Seattle this year, but like we were like, if we're going to spend the money to fly out west, let's go see more than one. Because the other thing we try to do is if we can only take in like one major league ballpark, we try to do a minor league ballpark.
Ooh, yeah. Oh, that's a
good idea.
So like we did, okay. So 2021 is when I did the Yankees. That's when I did Yankee Stadium. We actually, the night before went and saw, Scranton Wilkes-Barre.
Yeah. Oh, awesome.
And then we actually bought tickets. The Yankees game we went to was actually against the Red Sox. So
that's cool.
That was pretty cool to go see. We were going to do the Yankees and Mets in 2020. We had tickets bought. They were home the same weekend, and coincidentally, the Reds were playing at Yankee Stadium.
Oh, wow. Oh, and that's such a bummer.
It happened, and it was like, well, we can't – it's too hard to find a weekend that they're both home at the same time. So we ended up doing the Yankees in 21, and we did actually do the Hall of Fame on that trip too.
Okay,
In Cooperstown. And then last year we did the Mets. So
it's just a cool way to see the country too, honestly.
Oh yeah.
It's so cool.
My stadium bucket list this summer, I'm going to Boston. I'm gonna go see Fenway.
Are you?
Yes. And it's obviously to see the Yankees and Red Sox. So I am so excited for that.
That'll be a cool one. We did Fenway, we did Boston, Baltimore, Philly, and Pittsburgh in one.
Oh, wow.
So.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's so nice about, like, hitting all those stadiums. You can do it. It's very doable to do it in a week's time. They're all close enough. You can go by train or, like, I don't know. You said you did. Did you guys drive?
Yeah. So, well, like, we talked about Milwaukee earlier. Literally, we took a weekend. We went to a Saturday game to see the White Sox. We went to a Sunday afternoon game to see Milwaukee. Drove home. Two ballparks done.
Yeah.
Okay, John, let me ask you for a bit of expert advice here because you've obviously been to a lot of other stadiums to see the Reds play.
Yeah.
Do you ever like get shit from other fan bases if you're like the only person wearing a red shirt? Because like I'm going to Wrigley Field on Monday and it's going to be Wilson Contreras' first game against the Cubs and the Cardinals are tanking pretty much this season. So for the first time, I'm going to feel like I don't know what to do with myself walking into Wrigleyville. How do I, you got any good one-liners for me? Like, how do I stay strong? Oh,
well,
no way, but I am rooting for my team, absolutely, but it's just going to be like a weird feeling to go into Wrigley Field and not feel dominant, you know?
Well, I am, in real life, like one of the most introverted people there are, so like I am not like in-your-face fandom.
Not looking for a baseball fight?
No, not at all. And I will say, like, okay, so if you were to view certain fan bases and think which ones are rough, I went to two games in Philadelphia with red stuff on. And I wasn't given any crap. However, I did have a six-month-old attached to me. So that does help.
That does help.
Okay, so I should bring a baby.
Yes.
Yeah, I am kind of worried about Boston being in Boston. So, yeah.
I mean, there will be a good showing of Yankees fans, though. Like, and maybe there will be here in Chicago, too. I'm going with my mom, who is a Cubs fan.
I think you'll be okay.
She'll be in her Cubs gear, right? So, like,
yeah.
I think you'll be okay just because I think there will be a fair amount of Cardinals fans there, too. I know it's probably a rivalry, but, like, I feel like you're going to get a decent amount there. Like, I've seen the Reds play in Cleveland. I've never had issues. Detroit, I had, like, one guy get in my face, but I think he was drunk, and it just was like, I'm walking out, whatever.
Yeah, that happens, too.
That same happened at Wrigley, too, and it was the same thing. He got in my dad's face, and I'm like...
That's the thing. Cubs fans can be brutal. So,
yeah.
We'll see.
I haven't really had any issues, I'll be honest. Most people you talk to, like, ask you, like, you know, like, yeah, I'm from Ohio, or, you know.
Yeah.
Reds type of thing. Like, we came out to see them, and people are like, oh, that's cool. So.
Yeah, I just feel like the Cubs fans are going to be really hungry and ready to just
go
at us.
The one thing I don't think that helps you, though, is the record.
Right. That's what I mean. Like, I think they're going to jump at any chance they can get to, like, rub that in anybody's face. So,
yeah, I can.
I'm also going to London in, like, a month to see the Cubs and the Cardinals. Yeah. And I'm like, man, yeah, let me just spend all my money to travel internationally to hopefully not watch a last place team. But we'll see.
Well, and I don't know. Do the Cubs have, like, a worldwide? I feel like they probably do have a pretty good international following.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like all the Midwest teams do because of the fact that, like, the West Coast teams are newer, and there's, like, a lot of the stretch of the Midwest into the West that don't have, like, Nebraska and stuff that don't have teams. So the Midwest teams in general, and, like, the older franchises, even like the Reds and the Cubs and the Cardinals, all have, like, fan bases that travel well and that are spread out pretty well.
I can buy that. I will say, for example, when I went to Yankee Stadium and saw them play the Red Sox, I was like, I have to find one of the most neutral baseball things I can find.
Yeah.
Well, before all the controversy came out with him, I wore my Tatis jersey.
Nice.
Because he's like, before the steroid thing, he's
like the face of baseball. Yeah.
He was universally liked by, like, most people.
Yeah.
And I wore that, and I actually got a ton of compliments on it wearing it there. So I was like, all
right. Good call.
So that one I was pretty
just don't wear Mets gear. Like, that's my one piece of it.
You do have some good Mets gear, though, don't you?
Yeah.
I have two Mets jerseys. So, like, I'm from Cleveland. I will always root for Lindor.
Yeah.
Like, it's tough to not. I know people do not like him. I love Pete Alonso. I think he's fun.
I liked him until he got into a fight with the Cardinals last year.
He gives guys like him and Vogelbach give bigger guys like me hope.
Have you seen the Vogelbach commercial of him thinking about stealing the bigger bases? Oh, man, yeah. It's one of my favorite things to come of the new rules.
yeah, but I always, like, this is the part I struggle with, because I always typically try to wear the home team stuff unless I'm seeing, like, the Reds play there. But, like, I'm going out west. So my dad hates the Dodgers, but back when he was a Reds fan, when he was younger, the Dodgers were their rival.
Yeah,
that's true.
So, like, I get it. He hates them and Oakland because, like, Oakland used to be really good. And,
Moneyball, yeah.
Yeah. Well, even well before that, that's who the Reds beat in the last World Series in 1990 was Oakland.
Ooh.
So... so, like, we go to Dodger Stadium, and I'm like, okay, like, I gotta be smart about what I wear. Like, I just gotta find, like, a blue t-shirt.
Yeah.
The Dodgers are definitely, they're known for
their intensity.
They play Miami. So it's like, I could be, like, the one Miami fan, and no one's gonna give a crap, but it's like, it's Miami. So.
Well, John, one of the other things that I love to follow you for And another thing that keeps you like engaged in baseball year round is that you are an avid reader of all the best baseball books. So I was hoping that you would tell us about a couple, maybe a recommendation of a few of your favorites.
All right. So I have two next to me. I came prepared. So the first one is relatively popular. It's The Soul of Baseball about Buck O'Neill. It is one of my all-time favorite baseball books just because it is about the Negro Leagues. And for anyone who doesn't know anything about Buck O'Neill, he basically is the guy that's responsible for the Negro League Museum in Kansas City. A lot of life lessons in this book. Only thing that was disappointing was he didn't get to live long enough to see himself get into the Hall of Fame. So that's disappointing. I'm glad he's in the Hall of Fame now, but like obviously one of those sadder things. But this book was fantastic. I picked it up and I read it in like 2 days.
Speaking of the Negro League Museum, did you guys see that I posted on the Babes Babes page the other day? They're building a new museum in Kansas City. Like, it's going to be huge.
Oh, yeah.
Did not see that.
Yeah, so I'm really excited for that.
When I went to Kansas City, I regret not going there. So, like, it's pretty high on my list to go back there and go to the museum.
Yeah, but definitely.
This definitely a good book, good life lesson book. Highly recommend. So this one's solely on baseball. Now, the second one I have isn't completely a baseball book, but it has baseball in it. It's more of a history book. The Cloudbuster 9.
Okay.
Ooh, I haven't heard of that one.
The untold story of Ted Williams and the baseball team that helped win World War II.
What?
Very
so basically,
cool.
For anyone that didn't know, there were a lot of baseball players that got drafted.
Yeah.
In World War II. While there was a school that opened up on the University of North Carolina's campus, there was basically fighter pilot school. And it was like one of the hardest schools to pass in the country for the military. It basically was like, we're going to teach you how to be a fighter pilot and for you to basically like live off the land if anything happens to you.
Wow.
Like they learned everything. And Ted Williams was one of the guys that got in it and passed.
Oh my gosh.
But it's basically about the school more than baseball. But they had a baseball team while they were there. So they played like other colleges and other military bases and just other random teams while they were doing that. So you had a team. So Ted Williams was obviously the biggest player, but like Carlton Fisk was there too. This book is fantastic. It's definitely more of a history book than it is about baseball, but there's a ton of baseball integrated into it.
Yeah.
I started to read it. Could not get into it. I'm like, I'm going to put it down. I'll wait a while. I'll start again. Waited a year or two, picked it back up, finished it in like 3 days.
Wow.
If you like history, highly recommend this one. This is a great book. And it's a lot of stuff you have no idea ever happened.
Yeah.
So I recommend those two. Of all the ones I've read, those would be the two I would recommend the most.
There's always really good life lessons in the game of baseball. I think that's part of the reason that I love it. So I'm sure there's a lot of those baseball books that have like those good life lessons, but how cool that there's something that's like that story that is not really around baseball, but it's still such a big part of it. That's awesome.
Yeah, that book I was really excited when I bought that book and I was so disappointed that I couldn't get into it the first time. And then I'm glad I gave it a second try and it was fantastic. And I knew none of that even ever happened. So
very cool. Wow, it's only a matter of time till they make like an HBO Max series on it or something. Yeah, so we should read the book, get ahead of it.
Yeah. But yeah, it's fantastic. And there's other books I've liked, but none that are necessarily like super noteworthy. So from like a Yankees perspective, I read CeCe Sabathia's autobiography.
Mm-hmm.
I've read Jorge Posada's autobiography. I'm trying to think of other Yankees ones I've read. I don't know if I've read, I want to say I've read a Cardinals one.
Rick Ankiel has a really good book called The Phenomenon. And that's one of my favorite baseball books that I've read. Cause he came up when he was really young, was like one of the most promising pitchers in their system. And then in a postseason game, like he got the yips and he never came back actually to pitch, but it's the whole story of like him just coming up as a kid into baseball and through his struggles with that. And again, it's like a huge life lesson book and you know, he wrote it and it's straight from him. And it's a really cool story.
Another biography I would recommend, because it wasn't by him, is on Cool Papa Bell in the Negro Leagues, because he has a lot of St. Louis connections.
Mm. Oh, I was just telling you before we started, too, that I just started Winning Fixes Everything, which I think is like a newer baseball book that just came out. But it is more or less about the Astros cheating scandal from what I read before I started reading it. But I'm like seven chapters in, and it's about so much of everything, especially about the business of baseball. So that's really fascinating, too. It's another good one.
I always like reading the books about how World Series teams were formed.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I think it was Tom Rinaldi wrote The Cubs Way, and it was about the form building the 2016 team.
Oh, wow. And
that book
would be fascinating.
Because it's like, you know, they went, so like, I'll give a snippet of it. One of Theo Epstein's pillars of building a team was to build four core position players. That's who you build around. And you go out and get everyone else, or develop, draft them, whatever. And pitchers, you can go sign. That's what he believed. And it was funny going into it. And if you remember anything about that team, if you were to guess which players going into it they thought would be the core four, and which ones pretty much ended up being the core four. It's kind of the funny thing. So
yeah. That would be really interesting, because, and that's like another good thing that's for teams that maybe aren't like as competitive right now to look at, because all of us as fans at one time or another are looking at our team and their system being like, what are you doing? None of this makes any sense, but there's always so much more going on than we could ever know. So to get those kind of insights is cool too.
Yeah.
I'd say those are probably the books I'd recommend. I don't know if there's necessarily any other, I mean, anything that interests you, I always say read. I'm a huge component of, you know, if baseball books are like you read as much of it as you can. So
I love that. I'm going to do a little plug for, we've talked about it before. Yes, Pepper.
Oh yeah.
Which is like such a good book for, you know, like the basis of our podcast, but just for our listeners who maybe weren't listening in the beginning when we talked about it, but it's a children's book that was written by a Yankee fan. And he wrote it for his two daughters to basically just encourage them that, like, yeah, girls can play baseball too. So I just really love it. And we've talked about bringing him on our podcast. I've talked to him. He's agreed to do so. And we just need to make time to do it. But that's my plug. Yes, Pepper, Girls Play Baseball Too by Jason Klein. So there's a
reading for all ages.
Add to your collection.
I have one more that my son would recommend. It's called Goodnight Baseball.
Aww.
And it's funny because so last fall when the Guardians were playing the Yankees in the playoffs, my son knows baseball, et cetera, et cetera. We're out to eat on my wife's birthday, and the game, I think it was game five actually, was on TV. He literally points at the TV and he's like, Bayball, the first time he ever said it. So this book now, he recognizes it as baseball. Like he was like a year and a half, obviously, at that time. So he's well in the two now. So he's developed way more into a toddler than he was then. But like, I'd read the book, and when I would close it, he'd look and he'd be like, night, night, Bayball.
Oh.
So that's a book we read a decent amount. So he really does like that one.
Hey, so. I'm guessing they probably have a Goodnight Reds book. Because I actually bought a book for my friend when she had a baby. A year and a half ago, and it was Goodnight Cubs. I think all the teams probably have them now. So you should look that up and see.
I'll have to check that out. We have a couple of the Goodnight books. Like, we have one that's called Goodnight Cracker Barrel. And it's the funnest book to read.
Another classic Midwest one.
We only keep the finest literature in our house. So. But yeah,
Do a little, we always do like our Ruth's rundown to finish up the podcast, where we talk about like what's currently going on in baseball. And obviously we've kind of touched on some of that along the way, but what is like your favorite moment of the first month of the season here? Anything so far that's like stuck out to you, whether it was a big home run or a certain player that's doing well that you're enjoying watching?
I'll try and think something Reds related, and I would say it was probably their win against the Rangers that clinch them the sweep. So the Reds have a player named Nick Senzel. Mm-hmm. And he was the number two overall pick in 2015, maybe. I might be off on the year. I don't remember exactly. But he was pretty hyped up. And he made his way through the minor leagues. And then he has just been plagued with injuries his entire career. Like, he came up in 2019, right around this time of the year, hit very well. And then ever since then, it's just been injuries, 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 injuries. Well, he's broke his toe at the end of last season and like bad enough that like he wasn't like a cast like the entire winter.
Ugh.
So he started off in AAA. But they said in spring training, he was hitting the ball better than they've ever seen him hit it. So he batted well in AAA, got called up. Most times when players get called up, they don't, you know, tear the ball right off the get-go. It takes them some time to warm up. Well, he finally started getting warmed up. Well, funny enough, the Reds just went through like an 8 or 9 game stretch without a home run. And that's the longest stretch they've had in my lifetime. Wow. So they are not a team that's hitting the long ball this year. They're definitely small ball this year. But Reds were winning, going in the top of the ninth. They blew the lead, tied going in the bottom of the ninth. First guy gets on. Senzel hits a walk-off home run to his first row in left field, his first ever walk-off home run, first home run of the season, breaks the home run drought for the team. And, like, he was practically in tears when I interviewed him. And I'm like, that was needed for him. And ever since, up until the last, like, 2 games, he was destroying the ball. He was the NL Player of the Week.
Oh, yes. Okay. You're talking about him. I'm like, I know I've heard his name recently.
So from a Reds perspective, that was definitely the feel-good moment of the year. Because, like, he hit it. They won the game. They swept the Rangers. Like, I had nothing against the Rangers, but obviously sweeping a team always feels really good. So I'd say that's mine.
What about you, Jonna? We know the Yankees have had their ups and downs and lots of injuries plaguing that team. But whether it's Yankees related or not, you got a season highlight so far?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there have been a lot of them, but it's been really fun to see Gerrit Cole just totally like crushing it. And I think he really will or is making a good run at Cy Young this year. And so it's really fun watching him just completely dominate. And I think that's my highlight. But obviously Judge hitting a home run in his first at bat this year was like just storybook stuff. So
yeah, picking up right where we left off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, mine for the Cardinals, I guess, is Nolan Gorman. That was a big call out that I had, honestly, from even last season. I was like, just wait till next season for this guy. And he has been by far, I mean, at least in my opinion, the highlight of the Cardinals season so far. And I think he's going to be really steady with that. So excited to keep watching him. But overall, like in baseball, I loved the Drew Maggi storyline for the Pittsburgh Pirates, how he came up after 13 years in the minor leagues. He played over 1,000 games in the minor leagues. And he finally got his first major league at bat. And the coolest part about that to me was the fans and like the support around him and watching him talk on the field after that game. Cause at first I was like thinking about it when he first got called up and I was like, I don't know how I would feel about that if I were him. Like, I've worked all this time for this, but like, I know it's going to be so short lived and like, will I even get an at bat? And you know, I'm only probably going to get an at bat if we have a big lead or whatever. But hearing him talk afterwards, it solidified like so much for me, and especially somebody who's, you know, in my mid-30s too. And of course, there's still hopes and dreams and things we all want to work towards. And it was just really inspiring to me. And it reminded me that there's always something to love about watching baseball, even if your team is not having the best stretch. So
yeah,
that was a good reminder for me.
I guess I want to add Liam Hendricks of the White Sox.
Oh, my gosh. Cancer-free. Yes.
And I've been following that and oh my gosh, I have chills just like talking about it. But that to me was like That was amazing.
Yeah, unreal. He's going to be back like any day now too.
I think I'm going to go.
Yeah. You're like, yeah, just, you know, take your time, Liam.
I would think they'd bring him back for a home game.
I think so too. I'm hoping to, if it all lines up, if the Angels stay steady with their rotation, I believe that Shohei Ohtani is going to, will start at guaranteed rate on the South side on Memorial Day. And so I'm hoping to go see him.
The Angels play in Cleveland next weekend, and I think he might pitch Mother's Day. So,
well, he's just going to hit up all the holidays.
He did not pitch against the Yankees, and I was relieved to see the release.
Yeah, I'd rather go see him play a team I'm not invested in. So, though. Well, John, thank you so much for joining us today. And I certainly feel just as inspired and excited about baseball as ever. And I appreciate you sharing your love of the game and your love of your team for better or for worse. And we'll put your Twitter handle in the show notes because you've got tons of good family content, but also tons of good baseball content. And John's one of my favorite Twitter follows. So right after you finish listening to this episode, go follow John on Twitter and we'll keep up with you all season long.
Yes. Thank you so much, John. And go read Goodnight Baseball to your kiddos.
I will have to. That'll have to be tomorrow night, but yeah.
Good night, baseball. Good night from all of us here at Babes.